charge and they're absolutely grief-stricken, they're your main suspects. The first thing is, it always was the parents were the main suspects to start with. So you're then dealing with somebody at the height of their grief and you're treating them like a suspect, and that isn't easy.
So, just changing the subject very, very slightly, how do you decide what's beyond the pale? Basically, I have a brief from my editor who says, kill them all, you know? So, hang on a minute, you know, I'm trying to put a bit nuance into this, you know, but no, kill them off, get rid of them all. You know, how do you actually take that into the writing of the books? Are you left alone to write the book that you choose, or is there a kind of template that your editors want you to write to, basically, Danny?
I think the kind of following the thing there, the
we're getting a bit of feedback here from one of them.
Hello.
It's a Bolton minute.
I think the thing about the kind of alcoholic policeman with the divorced and all that. I think it kind of I think it's a sort of genre convention, and I think my detective is a young policeman. He's 25 years old. Now I kind of wanted to avoid all that, but
is there a machine back there?
I wasn't doing it on purpose. I swear.
With bleeding ears, the audience dies.
How are we doing?
Heard that from the audience.
Sorry.
They want to turn them off. How's that? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's better.
Is that working?
Interesting.
Keep talking about
it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Do have certain conventions and. My cop's a young cop, and he's quite a sort of, you know, very old young guy, and he kind of enjoys his life. But I kind of do imagine him somewhere along the line being divorced and an alcoholic. I think as the case kind of like wears him down. So I think you do have kind of, you know, genre conventions that you do have to follow. And I think we try to break them. I think it will kind of lead you into a dead end somewhere. It's like with your action guy, if all of a sudden you kind of. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah, I can't be bothered to.
Hung up his guns, you wouldn't have a story. So, I think you do follow genre conventions, and I think you've also got to enjoy them and celebrate them and kind of, you know, freshen them up. I mean, the thing about writing noir is that, I just had a certain feel about kind of it being twisted and, you know, twisted and turning plots and, certain people not being who they are. So, it's not going to be a bright, sunny day in one of my stories thus far.
Yeah. Quentin, anything on that?
Dead bank manager every 100 pages is nice. That's more or less what I was asked for last time anyway, and it's that's what's happened. I was more or less left to get on with it.
Yeah. Anybody else? Do you have a brief that you stick to?
I don't have a brief from my publishers at all because I write about Italy and Italian politics, and they don't know anything about it. So I can make it up. I mean, actually, the Italian legal system is different. It's like the French one. It's not the police who lead the investigations. It's the magistrate who then appoints the police. But the idea of the convention, disciplines a piece of work. I deliberately chose crime because I have read an awful lot of crime. I like crime and so on, but also for the discipline that it brings to writing. The idea of the lonely alcoholic policeman is perfectly justifiable. I mean, if no fairy story starts without getting rid of the parents. Every single fairy story, you get rid of the parents at the beginning, and that's the convention. So you have to have the heroine or the hero has to be alone, whether it's Hansel and Gretel or Sleeping Beauty or anything. The parents are out, right? Philip Pullman does the same thing when he's writing children's book. Get rid of the parents, then you write your children's book. Same thing with detectives. You know, detectives basically have to be solitary figures looking in through the window into society from outside. It makes sense to that convention. I think it's almost a religious thing in that a generally, and this goes to the question you asked about paedophilia, and, you know, do we want, is it okay to write about paedophilia if then he gets his comeuppance at the end? And yeah, I suppose it is, because the one of the reasons people read crime fiction is to see, is to read a genre in which the world is put to rights, in which the chaos and the brutality and the violence of the world is put to rights, and it has a sort of meaning in the end, which it doesn't in real life. And that's sort of almost a religious instinct. In fact, I would say in irreligious societies, Protestant societies, that sort of advanced Protestant societies, whether they be Sweden or Denmark or England, have a long tradition of crime, which has sort of taken over from strong religious belief, in that, you know, the detective is the figure who corrects injustice. And the Americans as well, they have this Anglo-Saxon idea. Southern Europe, Italy, where I come from Dublin, you can hear that from my accent, but I've lived so long in Italy, I consider myself Italian now. My family's Italian. They don't really have that. They have their Catholicism, they have other beliefs. The convention of the lonely, angry detective is, makes perfect sense, and I wouldn't abandon it.
No. And the samurai as well, he goes on through culture.
Or Elmer Leonard, who does his lone sheriff as well as his lone policeman. The books are exactly the same, whether you read Elmer Leonard writing westerns or Elmer Leonard writing his sort of comic Detroit mafia Get Shorty sort of it's the same one good guy.
Funnily enough, you should say that I tend to look at my books as kind of modern day westerns. It's very, very similar in respect to the marshal who used to walk in to dodge and clean out the bad guys, you know. So I can relate to that, you know. Right, lifting it slightly, here we go. Would you be proud or mortified to be nominated for the Bad Sex Award in fiction? So, you know, it's something that I'd be aghast. Sheila Quigley, another writer, she was asked, why don't you have any sex scenes in your books? And she said, well, I've been told to write what I know. So I've kind of taken on that ethos as well, you see, and thought, no, I won't go there. My sex scenes appear off the page, okay? Do anybody go into the sexier matters in their books?
No.
I remember my wife saying, complaining once, and I said, I can see I'm a lousy lover after only 30 seconds.
No, I steer clear of it. Yeah. In general, I feel that less is more. I can't see myself getting a bad sex award, but I think I'd be probably quite proud to be nominated.
Just to be nominated.
I'd be very surprised because I've no sex in mind whatsoever.
No sex. Mm. So we'll kill lots of people, but we won't make love to them, Danny?
Yeah, my guy does.
Oh, well, there you go. saved at the last second.
Yeah, he does. I kind of write them about him, and he there will always be the other great convention, the kind of femme fatale, that kind of draws him in, and he does have an emotional relationship throughout the novel, in the first one, and he does in the second one. In fact, I've even got dressed in a cat suit in the second one, which is... And I did write a kind of sex scene in it, and I quite liked it, and I quite enjoyed writing it as well. Yeah. I think it must have got, you know, reading those kind of magazines when you were reaching up to the top shelf when you were a kid, allegedly.
Yeah.
And sort of
I've
like,
heard
you know,
about those, yeah.
That was my
yeah.
first kind of introduction to erotic writing, so probably not great, but in this, that kind of. But yeah, I mean, you can't, if it veers near pornography, it kind of generally does. Mm. It's just appalling writing. But I also think there's another way of doing it is to write a sex scene that's funny. Because I've had a few of them in my time.
Yeah.
So they're not so, you know, where something particularly funny happens, you know, where you kind of do it. But, you know, he will have an emotional journey along with the violence. He will have a kind of romantic adventure.
But often what's left unsaid is more powerful than
Absolutely.
Than spelling everything
well,
out.
It's like a film, isn't it?
Just,
you know, it's
yeah.
like the kind of the
train going into the tunnel
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly. Good director.
Splashing water.
I was actually thinking of the negligee falling down the bed. But,
okay.
Yeah,
it's
kind of
shows you what kind of mind I've got, sorry. So, funnily enough, you know, we can all smile about it. We're a bit dour talking about violence. Well, we wouldn't go. We're talking about sex. We're all kind of smiling and, you know, we're a bit embarrassed, you know. But as crime writers, why is it that sex is still considered more of a taboo than the violence in our books?
Because it's so hard to do it well. It's so hard to write about it convincingly.
Yeah, right.
Without it. It's so hard to write about it without it being just funny.
Without it being laughable.
There's almost no one that can do it, you know. Even Lawrence.
You if you already write about death and then you try to write about sex, you've basically covered human existence. You know, and so you're asking a bit much.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
True. You should leave sex, I think, to the serious literary, the Booker genre, or to the romantic novelists, and keep sex out of...
Do they have sex in romantic novels? I thought they avoided that at all costs.
Depends.
I thought it's the romantic.
Oh, some of them have them.
Yeah.
Are they the bonk busters?
There are those too, but there's a lot. Mills and Bean has whole ranges.
Really?
I think you can get Mills and Bean spices, apparently the really hard stuff or something like that.
Oh, it goes at a spice rack.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is hot, medium and...
Trains
and
tunnels and everything.
So... I've got an image in my head now, sorry.
Well, you're going to blow up the train.
I'm going to blow the train up with some incendiary device. It begs a question, though. Should there be a bad violence award for crime books? And would I have won by now? You know, so, you know, should there be a bad violence award? Do you think we should be self, more or less, looking at the genre and being able to laugh at ourselves and say that was particularly bad killing in that book, you know, would it be something that you'd be happy to receive the award for the bad violence award?
I'd be mortified to receive one of those.
Yeah. Funny. Angel?
It would certainly improve your writing because you'd be terrified of getting one, wouldn't you?
You'd have it up again, wouldn't you? Yeah. Anybody else?
No, I'd love to win it.
Any award?
I think you have so many different kind of variations of violence. I mean, if you can blow up a building and kill 300 people, or you can get kind of a nasty fight in a lift. I always remember seeing Sean Connery have a fight with this guy. It was Diamonds Are Forever, the film. And it was just a close quarter thing of this lift going up. And it was two big guys having this fight. And it just struck me. I remember seeing it was quite kind of horrific, considering the violence that had gone on before, which you just don't notice in blowing away a bunch of people, but this kind of hand-to-hand combat sort of thing. And I think I try and get that over in the books, but I don't deal with serial killers, so he has a pretty close.
Yeah, I think with violence, it's a wide range of issue as well. It's like you say, you can be very cold about it and say he shot him. You know, it's when you say you shot him and the bullet went in his eye and came out the back of his head and spread gore against the wall. And, you know, it's where it actually goes from being acceptable to being gratuitous. You know, and I think that's the kind of level that people work on.
The bad violence would be sort of South Park, you know, the cartoon, that sort of violence, where it's just so stupid it makes you laugh.
That's where you... Sometimes it's best if it is slightly over the top, then you can just smile at it and, you know, walk away. Is that
they have cosy crime, don't they? And people do get killed in these things. It's like what's that murder
she wrote?
Midsummer
Murders.
Midsummer Murders. It's a cosy crime, but people do actually get killed. You know, you forget that. So it's like
with screenplays, you can actually pass it on because all you see in the screenplay, you know, he fired, hitting the person in the head. You end it. But it's down to the director how he actually describes that. So it's much easier to do it in a screenplay than it is in a book. You've actually got to describe the effect of a bullet actually hitting a head.
It was interesting you mentioned there about, like I said, the causes against, you know, the more the grittier crime, that end of the genre. Is there a place probably in the world, you know, you've got your X-rated movies on the top shelf and your magazines on the top shelf. Some people are suggesting, should there be stickers, warning stickers on some books to say that it's graphically violent or it might have some sort of sexual content that doesn't appeal to people? What do you think about that?
It really helps sales, actually.
It would, sell more.
If it would help sales, then fine. Otherwise, no, not at all.
Definitely, yeah.
People can find
out. You couldn't have a rap album without it. If you come to kids buying a rap album and it doesn't have advisory discretion,
that's right, parental guidance, they wouldn't buy it then. Yeah.
the idea for DVDs now, it says edited for home viewing, and the one next to it says unedited. And the one says edited for home viewing, just a great stack of them. And the one says empty, and there's one left.
You always watch that one. The director's cut. Yeah.
I mean, I start off with a kind of, it is a crime against a woman. And it's a young blonde girl, and my niece is a young blonde girl, and she wanted to read the book, and I kind of snatched it out of her hand. So I wasn't this book is available on the bookshelf, and people can buy it. And it is quite strange that you can't feel a bit uncomfortable about it.
You can, and it's something that I'm conscious of, you know, because the kids. I don't want to label all kids, but kids nowadays brought up on the more violent the video game is, the more they want to play it, and they're getting shown images. You see TV adverts all the time now of, you know, it's scenes from these games, and it's someone going in and blasting everyone to pieces with machine guns and, you know, that kind of thing. Do you think nowadays violence in books has escalated from what it was maybe 20, 30 years ago, to appeal to that kind of mentality? People are more used to graphic images now. If you remember the video nasties from the 80s, they're laughable now, you know, we just go with it. Do you think people are more, you know, they've been more or less, they're more open to those scenes now, and they kind of come to expect them in books?
Desensitised,
that's the word I was trying to think of. They've been desensitised somewhat.
You get the feeling they're desensitised younger.
Yeah.
At a much earlier age. I mean, children of 10, 11 are quite happy to watch these, you know, pretty graphic scenes. And maybe they'll read about it as well, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not absolutely convinced by that, because I think with my own children, that if they read something, I have a video nasty, they do have video nasty games, they do see drama sort of a bit nasty. They're not desensitised when they suddenly find out these people are blown up on a tube or blown up in a bus, or it's actual violence. I can show they're not desensitised from that whatsoever. And I think people are much more discerning than we ever give them credit for.
Yeah.
And I actually pointed, I said, you know, did that scene a bit? I said, Dad, it's a drama. Yeah. And they know, children are not stupid. They know the difference between what's real and what's not. And like, you know, when it comes to real violence, that my children are desensitised, they're very upset about it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something that's a drama or something that's a video game, then they're more than capable of coping with that and realising what it's really all about. I think the news I tend to find, and I was in Italy recently and watched a news report there, and the news reports in Italy are far more graphic than they are here. Right. I mean, the famous scene of the shooting at, was it Rome Airport, where they started with a young model, it was actually, had been shot through the eye. And they actually started with a close-up of the eye with it had been shot away. And then pull back. I thought, that was probably the most violent thing I can ever remember seeing. And that was a news report. You know,
The Italians are very, very visual people.
Yes.
They have to be a model as well.
Yeah, that's what they did it for.
No, but I think the violence has got, a bit like the movies themselves, has got louder, but not necessarily worse. Mm-hmm. I also think it's become more forensic. I think everybody is now a would-be scientist, thanks to Patricia Cornwell and CSI. There's an awful lot of that. You know, everybody. So a lot of literally dissecting the corpse. Mm. But that's not necessarily more shocking. I find it about as fun as I found opening a frog in science class. It's just not fun. But you know, it's not. But you know, it's not that bad either. I don't think you can achieve, as Quentin was saying, less is more. You can achieve a really shocking effect with, you know, he shot him or something like that. Those words, you think, Jesus, wait a minute. I was just thinking about this character. I was just involved with this character, and then he's killed. You know, and that can shock you. That can shock you as a reader more than, you know, Patricia Cornwell talking about how long it takes a corpse to decompose in a wood in Virginia. You know.
I think this material's always been out there as well. I was reading The Glass Key by Dashiell Hammett, and there's this torture scene in it, effectively. And this is 1929, the 1930s book. It goes on for a good couple of pages, and it's really, you know, this guy goes through some, like, 3 days of getting the shit beat out of him, you know. And it's really quite, I found it quite graphic. It was Very quite wincingly disturbed.
You know who's quite disturbing as well? Is Ian Fleming is kind of...
Oh, yeah, cold and brutal.
He's kind of cold and brutal and unengaging as a writer. I think he's a good writer, but he's cold and brutal and unengaging. And
I think it's the character.
Well, I think Ian Fleming himself, actually, but, you know. But, you know, that can still have an effect.
Mm.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I think perception comes into it a lot with people and what they perceive as violence as well. Why is it violence in a movie, in an action movie, it's called action? Violence in a book is called violence. Is this just some sort of pigeonhole that books have been put into? For example, you know, if there's a gunfight in an action thriller, it's a violent scene. Whereas in a movie, it's an action scene. You know, do you face so when you're writing your books, are you thinking it as violence or another action scene?
I tend to think of it as violence. I mean, I almost kind of choreograph them, so because it's like I actually find them quite difficult to write. So I take special care in writing them because it's like if there's a fight going on, I kind of want the fight to work out as it would be. You know, I don't want to just kind of, I actually don't want to kind of skip over it too much. I think it, you know, if it's a close contact fight, I actually kind of do want to explain it, and I do want the my audience to kind of go with it. So, but I would probably call it violence. Actually, give it its name.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
Quentin,
I just call it violence as well.
You call it violence.
It's something I've used fairly sparingly.
Right.
And I find it very hard to do to start with.
Okay.
I find it very hard to write. But it's getting easier.
Yeah.
Be a bit more violent and a bit more imaginative about it.
Mm. Anybody else?
It's hard to convey movement with violence as well when you're writing. It's hard to convey movement. and even in script writing, you know.
Mm.
If you ever watch any American series, whenever they have to discuss something, there's this convention where they have to march down a corridor. You know, whether it's Dr. House or something, he limps down the corridor with all the doctors around him, right? As he explains something, that's the only way they can explain something, because they can't have exposition with static characters around around the board. So there's this convention in just about every Hollywood movie in which, you know, the person who's explaining is marching down a corridor as he explains, you know, just to give the illusion of movement. It's really annoying once you notice it. and when you're writing a book, you sort of have to choose between action or violence. You can't quite get both of them together. It's really hard. Whereas when you're making a movie, you can combine the two.
Mm.
You know, punching in the face is both. It's action and violence. But you know, he punched him in the face. Full stop. All right. And then you have to talk about the blood. And then you have to. You know, so there is a separation. There's a logistical problem. There's a technical problem when you're writing to get action and violence. Therefore, it's violence.
Yeah. I cued in the sirens just, you know, to...
I think the most interesting way I saw a film get over that was the recent Sherlock Holmes film, where he describes what he's going to do.
That was very good, isn't it?
You know,
yeah.
I thought that was very clear. Describes what he's going to do. In slow motion,
the box,
and then you can do this, and this is what's going to happen. And then in normal time, he does it.
Then he delivers it. Yeah.
I thought I was incredibly smart.
The boxing.
Yeah. Time's rapidly catching up with us, chaps. What I'd like to do is invite a few questions from the audience if anybody's got anything that they'd like to speak to us about. And, you know, we'll take Caroline, please.
There's a difference between violence and action and sadism.
Yeah.
And I think in most of the good novels, you can find a line where that is drawn and still get the effect you want.
Yeah.
Without using the sadistic part that makes it less effective sometimes for the reader.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah. It wasn't so much a question. Could everybody hear that okay? Yeah. It's more a comment than a question.
Yeah.
Does anybody disagree with that? I totally agree with what you just said.
No,
yeah.
I agree entirely.
Sorry?
I agree entirely.
Yeah.
I think sometimes within certain silent wit is an easy thing to do, because obviously she's a pathologist. And she'll look, so you'll find the body. And then when she's doing the PM, she'll describe, rather than writing down he then did this or she then did that, they'll then describe what the PM process is. and through that you'll be able to see, you know, exactly what happened to this person. And that's the kind of way I got around it.
Yeah. The word obscene literally means off scene. You know, so an obscene act is an act that shouldn't happen in front of people. And so I tend to agree that if there is going to be an obscene act of sadism, it should be off scene. For me.
Mm.
Because my personal experience as a writer is that if I am reading, if the prose is glorying in a act of particular sadism, I think, whose company am I in now? You know, who is this writer? Would I like to meet him? He's probably here, you know. But I do feel slightly uncomfortable. I think, you know, this is you're making me complicit in something I'm not sure I want to be complicit in.
Interestingly enough, though, with my first book, I often look back on it now and think I wish I'd kind of torn down that final scene very, very slightly, because it touches on what you're saying there with the sadism part. In my defence, what I will do is I was trying to build utter hatred and contempt for the bad guy at that point to ensure that everybody rooted for the good guy, even though he was quite uncompromising in the way he dealt with him. But I do agree. I think it's you can have violent action without the sadism creeping in. You don't need that on the page. I don't think it's not attractive, really, is it?
No.
What is the difference between violence and sadism?
I think the sadism is. I think, from my point of view, is the difference between violence and sadism is. I think the sadism would be actually describing the minutiae, if you want, of the actual act. And kind of glorifying it and reveling it, basically, whereas if you do it as a reality rather than glorifying it, it's just violence. That would be my description. Has anybody got any other ideas?
It's in the portrayal.
Yeah, it's in the portrayal.
But also like bestsellers like Stieg Larsson, which I've only read the first one, but that describes in great detail the torture and the basement and stuff.
To me, sadism, I don't know, I'm not a great fan, but there we go.
I think sort of a thing with sadism is like you're talking about Ian Fleming. I almost think it's part and parcel of James Bond's character, that he's got a certain amount of sadism in it. And I think I think Fleming brings that out.
I have problems with Larsson for that, and so do a lot of feminists. Mm. They have problems with Larsson. They say, you know, it's one thing to give your books a heroine with a cause, but you're still a man dwelling for an awful bloody long time on that.
I agree with that.
It's like torture and rape. It's very graphic. It goes on for a long time. I think he sort of gets over it by this righteous anger
and explains why she acts the way she does.
Well.
Yeah. And it sold millions of books. There was another question. Sorry, I'll come back to the question.
You spoke about conventions earlier on. Do you, any of you, consider ageism in your protagonists, especially? I mean, is there an upper limit, especially for protagonists, either the good or the bad, that you have a conscious idea of?
I quite like it. I wrote a book called, it was originally called Still Waters, and it became Call of Evil. And in that, the killer's an elderly lady who goes around killing other elderly ladies, acquiring their fortunes, assuming their identity, and then moving on again. Because what I didn't want to do was have a young nubile. So it sort of amused me. But the point about the age of this lady was that they weren't sure how long she'd been doing this or how many identities she'd gone through doing it. I desperately tried to move away from young nubile girls being murdered in a very variety of ways, which I know is very popular. You can still see the films selling like awful things like Saw. It all seems to be the same thing. I think they're dreadful, but...
Well, there is ageism, definitely. I mean, I said my publishers have never told me to do anything. There was one thing. They did tell me, your detective ought to age more slowly than humans do. He should, you know, every maybe 3 years he might advance 1 year. But don't put him too much over 40. Keep them 38, 45 maybe, but over 45, no. Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, Harold Shipman is not a good subject for, because he's not right, is he? You know.
So.
I actually think in this country we very much the crime stories do actually quite cater for the older generation. They do seem to, like, as you said, there seems to be a lot of kind of middle-aged detectives, and I think why I kind of wanted to do, I mean, it's even like kind of books I like Chandler and Marlowe. I think he starts off, he's 35, which back in the day when it was written, that was like almost equivalent to being 45, and I was quite interested in Marlowe when he was young. What kind of got him to where he is sort of now? The kind of that journey, as opposed to starting him off kind of a little bit older.
My detective started out as being my age, my late 40s, and I was told in no uncertain terms that she had to be younger.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Just time for this. Sorry.
Yeah. Your role characterized, I suppose, what you have in common is a degree of violence or action in your books. And I, as a reader, and I'm not sure if others would agree with this book, would tend to think that the more a book is geared towards action, violence, adventure, it's at the expense of characterization in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel, is that fair, or is it something that you try to be very aware of as well?
Well, I my second book has almost no violence in it whatsoever, except at the end. But I come back to my previous point about the genre enforcing discipline. If you manage to speak about violence, and if you manage to make it a page turner, and then if you manage to do characterization, you've written something very, very good. Whereas a literary novel, if it concentrates on characterization but isn't exactly a page turner, can be a far inferior work. A bad detective novel, you can say, like that. A bad literary novel, you fling across a room.
A good point in order. Yeah. To end on, I should say. Yeah. Just before we finish, two quick things. We'll go on into the room adjacent here if anybody would like to, you know, get books signed or anything off any of the panelists. I'd just like to thank you all for again coming, and thanks for not falling asleep on us at this time of day. And last but not least, we have to a book bag of books to award, and I'm going to cop out here and ask the panel which question from the audience they feel is most deserved of the prize. We can only have one, so first person who comes up with it.
I thought I asked the best question.
Back to me then. I'm going to pick the lady at the back who asked about the I can't even. Yeah,
yes.
The lady at the back. So well done. Well done. And thanks very much for the panel. Thank you very much indeed as well. Thank you.